Episode 17 of The Exit Strategy, Charles Bennett, leadership executive coach and professor at HEC Paris, the number one business school in Europe. How are leadership styles different in the United States versus Europe? We asked Charles how leadership styles are impacting global economics today. Now let's hear the count.
One, two, three, four.
You're listening to The Exit Strategy, a podcast that inspires open discussions about financial news and technology today. My name, Marcus Magarian, a recovering SaaS vendor, joined by my co-hosts, Ralph DeFiore and Swadek Mazumdar. And we're sitting down with startup founders, technology experts. Now let's begin.
It was like the wrestling yeah. Generation, you know.
WWF.
WWF. This is the light of like the exit strategy.
We know Marcus as Russell Crowe of Chatsworth.
I'm gonna write it down. Russell Crowe.
He is the Russell Crowe.
But Charles is the Charles Bennett of the exit strategy, and like we're so happy to have Charles as a part of the podcast. You know, Charles is all about leadership. You know, he's a leadership instructor. He's even a professor at my business school, which is the number one ranked school in the Financial Times globally for European business schools. So I was quite impressed because most of the CEOs in the public listed companies in France, even a couple of the recent French presidents, are alumni of this school. And when Charles was telling me, like, look, I am the leadership guy in this place, and I was like, well, I would love to talk to you. I would especially love for you to come on the exit strategy, because leadership is something that doesn't have a definition. It's one of those things, like, there's a lot of things these days in the market that are, there's no definition. You know, you've had even movies that come out, discuss topics that don't have one, but leadership is something that in the United States and in France are completely different, you know? So I love introducing Charles Bennett to the podcast. You know, Charles, tell us about yourself, introduce yourself, and we'd love to explore leadership with you.
Well, you did a great job already. I'm Charles Bennett. You know, lived in France for the past 14 years. I've had the opportunity to get a training in coaching and to work as a consultant in luxury. And one of the biggest things that was the biggest challenge for me when I started in this industry was finding the clients, because at the end of the day, it's not just enough to just have the coaching qualification. How do you get the clients? How do you reach out? So I had to leverage my network, and that's where the real work started. And I was able to get some contracts with business schools like ESSEC, HEC, of Norton Rose Fulbright, et cetera. But I realized through that path that there was a greater need in France, that's something that they hadn't really explored enough. And that was the whole soft skills avenue, where people that are French have an education that's taught to be more reserved, to not put yourself up front, to not sell yourself in a very sort of aggressive way. It's seen as, you know, oh my God, you know, when you're saying you're the best at something, you're not supposed to do that, which contradicts with the North American philosophy, where it's about putting yourself out there. And because if you don't do it, who's going to do it? So I realized my work was cut out for me. And so I started this curriculum on public speaking, soft skills, networking, that I presented to HEC, and they loved it because they believed that there's a niche for this, that too often their students, specifically after COVID, they were lost. They had lost their voice. They had lost their place, and they needed that sort of validation that they could potentially be stronger in their voice, stronger in their presentation, and stronger in their social skills. So voila. And so hence, I've been doing that for the past few years, taking on one-on-one clients, but also working in the leadership arena about helping women, a lot of women, because women tend to be a grouping of people in the world who are much harder on themselves, and they tend to need that little bit of a support, because often nobody is there. They're the mothers. They work in the company. They have so many different hats, and they want to be excellent at all of it. And I was there to sort of say, it's okay. You don't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
And that was my sort of mission with these clients. And over time, I've made inroads, and I've really been able to identify elements that could really bring leadership to the forefront.
Yeah.
Or these men and women that are MBA students at Asher San Essek.
So at Chatsworth, we have a very diverse group. Like Swadek, for example, deals with a very, very senior leaders in India. Ralph is the leader, or one of the founders of Chatsworth Securities. And, you know, over the course of founding it from being an IPO focused bank doing over 600 IPOs to becoming more of an M&A shop because the market changed. And even myself, after HEC, we opened a Brazilian bank, and the leadership structure there is probably more similar to France. Leadership doesn't have a definition. It changes with every country you're from. You're an American citizen. You moved to France. And obviously you had your challenges when it came to leadership, just like Swadek had his challenges dealing with. We had a number of customers from India who, you know, there was challenges with that. But what are the greatest challenges you see between places like France, United States, in terms of leadership style?
I think the biggest challenge is the fact that in France, we're really focused on titles. And the hierarchy, and less about the actual work that's done to earn that leadership role. And hence, it's more of you're a manager because you did the time versus you're a manager because you have the experience. You have the wherewithal, and you can bring people together and may really lead them to success. And what I realized working when I worked at Cartier for 12 years here in France and Canada was that there was differences were huge, that here was a very hierarchical structure. People would only advance if they knew someone that was specifically so that can grandfather and say, oh yeah, Charles is good, so you can bring him to the next role. It wasn't necessarily on performance, and it wasn't necessarily on what the person was bringing. It often just had to do with how much time you did. And I find that that's quite sad, because at the end of the day, a title doesn't make you a leader. A leader is what you exude, how you put your teams first before putting yourself, looking out to make sure that they shine. And I find that there were moments that were lost, because oftentimes the leadership structure was so skewed in France that it's hard for someone like myself who knows something else and to adapt to it, because at the end of the day, it's hard for me to believe in a leader who says they're a leader, but doesn't have the skills to be a leader. And so you feel like you're sort of going backwards, and you're sort of playing a game to make them feel and, you know, soften their ego, make them feel good that they're doing a fantastic job, when the reality is it's not real leadership. So I think that that's what's hard coming from North America, where the leadership is seen as something that's very, you know, you either have it or you don't. It's not obscure. And so just because you're a director or this or that doesn't make you a leader. And I think that that was the biggest shock for me to come and adjust to that structure.
Swadek, do you have any insights with you? Because you deal with a completely different culture. It's not US, it's not France, it's India. How is the leadership structure over there? How does it feel different when you're there versus the United States?
So earlier on, when I witnessed leadership styles in management styles in India, wasn't very professional. But today, you're seeing more professional standards being put. Earlier on, it was very centralized. The CEO or the chairman, you know, did everything, was responsible for everything, did not delegate. Today, you're seeing a lot of delegation happen. You know, you have different, just not designations, but there are roles that these guys play. So, happy to see the progress that's been made the last 10 years, more professional, leadership styles.
Like Ralph, when you opened up when you established Chatsworth Securities, I mean the need for leadership changed a lot. You were working with Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, it could have been Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, banks that no longer exist. And today the requirement for being a leader of your organization has changed significantly. Like time makes a difference with leadership style. Like there was watch a typical 80s movie. It's about, you know, departments being at war with each other, or this, very fantasy, you know, so when you watch movies like Secret of My Success with Michael J. Fox in the 80s, it's a very different leadership style than when you watch something like Emily in Paris, where you have this empowered woman that goes to another country and becomes like the dominant voice within her PR agency.
Well, I think the best way to look at this is to think in the past of the many bosses I've had. And I can think of one situation in the same company. I won't mention names, but my first boss, he was sort of a tyrant. And everybody was afraid of him, including me. I was a young guy at that time. And then he retired, and I got a great boss, a guy that was maybe 7, 8 years older than me, who trusted me, who let me, you know, enough rope to hang myself, but I never did hang myself. And his boss as well. And they were so supportive. I would have done anything for them. And I did. I was there every Saturday working along with the chief financial officer and the treasurer. And it was very rewarding to have leaders like that rather than a tyrant.
All these leadership styles are a test of things that we could see today. I mean, if it's things like, you know, be before the call, we discussed things like, you know, the Mbop versus Macron, how he was trying to console Mbop at the World Cup final in Qatar. You know, what's happening with FTX. I mean, that leadership structure was completely different. Or the difference between Elon Musk, how he's a leader with Tesla and SpaceX versus Twitter, or how Zuckerberg founded Facebook. And it's one thing. And when he tried to do a pivot into Meta, how that's turned out. But then you have leadership styles, which was like one of my favorite example is how Nokia used to be a timber company. And then they went from wood to cell phones. That is a massive change. It requires a complete digital transformation, a complete cultural shift of what it means to be a company.
Well, I think what you're going to realize is that there are codes that you kind of learn as you go along in business here, where you start to have to read the room and understand a bit how people manage their communication, how people make deals, how they take a little bit more time. They're not right away, you know, in French we say oteke, we're like, okay, let's do the deal. Like, you know, it's a bit more subtle. It's a bit, yeah. There's time that's taken. And if you try to contradict or do your methods the way you know it back in North America, you'll start to see that people are not open to someone who is trying to change them, who's trying to let them take the view in a different way. They want you to come here and adapt to their way. And irrespective if you agree with it or not, a part of you has to, in some ways, play the game. Yeah. And it's not an easy game to play, because sometimes there are things that you see that you think, oh my God, that just doesn't make sense. But at the same time, you have to sort of manage this dance of trying to make who you're working with, especially in a French media, understand that you're open to understanding their point of view, but you would like them to pivot to see yours.
You're immersed in their culture.
Yes. And you have to show interest as well, that you want to know more about how they do things.
Marcus, you mentioned about Elon Musk. You know, two great motivators and founders that, you know, strike out loud here is one is Ray Kroc, who mentioned the quality of a leader is reflected in the standards they set for themselves, you know, and also Peter Drucker was a management guru, really. It's one sentence, but it embodies so much. It says management is doing things right, leadership is doing the right things. And, you know, when you look at what Musk has been doing, you know, with Tesla and SpaceX and everything else, it's a total change of what he's trying to do with Twitter today. So at times, you know, you could be a good leader in one company, but if your culture is wrong, it just affects everything.
I think it has a lot to do with what Charles was saying, is that like when you go from things that are solid, like Tesla is a car company, and then you have SpaceX as a rocket company, then you have Twitter, which is a social media company. So the culture is different, even though they're all companies from the United States, culturally they're different. So you could have two car companies, like if you go to Renault versus Ford, I mean, I imagine that the cultural style is different. And what they value is different. And of course, you don't want to be like Elon Musk's problem was that he didn't adapt to what a media company is. You know, I mean, like Charles worked for many luxury companies, and then he became a professor at the number one university in Europe. And that's obviously going to be a change because you have a lot of the professors at the school, or at least the alumni that are there, extremely arrogant, very proud of their successes and all those things. So I could imagine that Charles, it was a very difficult challenge to transition to become heard, at least, or accept what leadership is.
That is true, Marcus, but a leader is a leader. It doesn't matter which company or what space that leader is leading, correct? It's a different yardstick that we can use and give them a pass. But at the end of the day, a leader is a leader no matter what company he or she leads.
Charles, how would you grade Elon Musk as a leader in Tesla, SpaceX versus Twitter?
Ooh. Well, I have to admit that from what little I've seen and read, I find that his leadership skill, he doesn't inspire me. He hasn't inspired confidence. I find that I've followed a bit of what he's done, you know, when he did that whole question a couple of days ago about, you know, should I stay, should I go? I just found that whole aspect a little bit bizarre. And it put a lot of things into question as to, you know, what is his commitment? Where is he at? I'm not really quite, I don't look at him as someone that I would say, oh my God, I would want to work for him. I'd want to work with him. There's too many.
I think you'd want to be with him if you were an engineer, but not if you're trying to be a social media guy.
No, definitely not.
Well, come on. It's in his defense, it's a hot potato. He got in there.
His hand's getting burned right there with the $44 billion.
Ralph, he bought the hot potato. Nobody forced him to do
it. Well, yeah, of course. But we all make
LOI
mistakes.
Forced him to do it. So
we all make mistakes trading, you know, and this was a bad trade for him. And I said it couple of podcasts ago, or maybe the last one, it's a shame that he's even involved in this, because you take a great mind and doer like he is, and he's floundering in an area where, you know, he shouldn't be. He should be running SpaceX and Tesla and some other science related company, not here. Look, there are masses of people who have all kinds of political persuasions who want to see him fail, and who in one way or another attack Twitter. So it's no wonder he can't be successful. I mean, the advertisers ran out on him pretty early on. That reduced the revenues. You know, he went from being a businessman to a political figure, and he's certainly not someone who should be in politics.
Charles, working at the greatest institutions for education in Europe, I mean, what are the things that surprise you the most when you're, at least the if it's either the transformation of your students understanding what leadership is, or just the experience that you had from day zero, T equals zero, to today? What are the biggest things that you notice that you feel are the most important things in the realm of leadership?
I think what I noticed the most was that I was dealing with people who were acclaimed and they did well. They were very successful in their career, yet they lacked confidence in their contribution. They didn't understand their offering. And oftentimes it surprised me, because these are people who have done really well on paper, yet how they felt about themselves and about their image, about what they were contributing, they didn't see it the same way. And so my work was often putting a mirror in front of them and making them understand how much and how wonderful they are and how much they've done, and to validate their contribution and their success, and for them to honor and own the success. Because oftentimes it's very easy for people just to say, it's not a big deal, I did this, I did that, but not to say, you know what, I'm proud that I did that. And that's the element of my work that I absolutely love, because sometimes you're dealing with people that are, you know, globetrotters, yet in some ways they put themselves in this childlike role of feeling small and feeling they have to be small to feel in the place they were as a child. So often I'm there to validate, say, look, you're bigger than that.
Yeah. There's even that book, Emotional Intelligence, that came out in the 90s with Daniel Goldman, and he followed like over 100 valedictorians who felt 90% of them felt unsuccessful in their future lives because they were very stuck in the books, but they didn't have the interpersonal skills as a leader. So they always keep getting pigeonholed in the end, because it's like, you can't put too much weight in one thing. I think when you're a leader, it has to be some level of flexibility. And like you mentioned, like in France, it's really dependent on the amount of time you put in versus like, this guy's a super performer, let's give him a shot and put him in like, you know, a VP role or some kind of leadership role. And that doesn't happen. I mean, even when like Macron became president, everyone became shocked. Like, 7 years ago, he became president for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody expected it because it wasn't within the paradigm of the nation.
Yeah. His age is like, there's so many things that went sort of against him, which is incredible, but he proved everybody wrong. And that's what's so wonderful about it. But it's true. There's the way we're a culture about, you know, your age equals your path. You know, if you're this age, that means this. If you're older, that means that. You can do this, you can attempt that. Versus wonderful in other parts of the world, I'll go back to North America, where you can become a CEO at 20 because you know your business. You have the instinct, you have the hunger to succeed. Yeah. And you're not afraid to put yourself in that place. And I think that that's what the nuance is between France and North America, where people will never put themselves in that place here because they think, oh, no, I'm too young.
When I lived here between 2005 and 2007. And then I graduated in June. And then 2 weeks later, the iPhone came out. Then a year later, the credit crisis happened. And all of a sudden, you have VCs and startup founders and CEOs popping out of the woodwork. And now you have over 50 or 20, it's pretty significant, new billion-dollar unicorn companies in France, which didn't exist before. But the one thing that makes them a unicorn is the fact that they had a U.S. investor. And the way that more than 50% of them are exiting at unicorn levels is because those U.S. investors encourage them to exit their companies. Or at least the style of the way they structure the companies changes completely. It's hugely transformative at the end. And yesterday I went to like the American Chamber here in Paris. First of all, there's no Americans. There's nothing. And I was like, well, who are you connected to? They have no connection. They're an independent organization, all that stuff. And everything in the association was 100% based on building committees. And I was like, well, what do the committees do? It's like, well, they discuss topics. Well, what are the topics resolved? Well, there's really no resolution because we're all discussing topics. I'm like, Well, you have to get somewhere if you want to discuss something. That means you have no leadership in the association. So whenever, I mean, I think that's one thing that's very important in the United States is that when you do something, they always ask you, what's your goal? You know, what's the mission? In France, it's like, this is how I feel. This is the spirit of the thing. Let's discuss. And when you watch a lot of TV shows, it's so much discussion about stuff without a conclusion. If you watch like the news reports about FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried or SBF, whatever you want to call him, people are trying to grill him and grind him down and get a solid answer. And it took weeks and people finally caught him and stating like, look, you did this wrong as a leader. And it became very clear what the problem was. It's never something that I've seen in places like France. It's like, it's a lot of discussion. It's a lot of, you know, it's just never very solid. And like every time, like one thing that a lot of my customers here, for example, they value is that I make it very clear. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. If this doesn't work, these are the alternate options that we have in terms of paths we could go in order to achieve your goal.
You have to be, in that respect, very cutthroat and shrewd and be able to say, look, this is what it is. And I think in some ways you're going back to, you know, being true. I think even if someone may not like the truth, they'll respect you for it. And sometimes it may be it's a better look for you to be authentic and to say what you think. Because at the end of the day, when your day is over, if you know you were saying exactly what you feel and what's really in your mind, you feel better than if you kept it hidden and you feel like you didn't get your point across.
The customer will disappear for like 3 days. But if you know that they'll disappear for like 3 days, it could be one, it could be three, it could be a week, it could be a month, but you'll know they'll come back. Because the truth is that like there's many customers we've lost to the bigger players here in Paris, and they've not achieved the goals that they wanted because of the fact that when you work, a leader has to achieve a goal, right? And if he doesn't set the goal and doesn't know where, like I go to every customer that we have, I say, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to set up an offer letter. The offer letter is basically what you want as the end result. And then I say, okay, where do you want to be in 3 years? And then we work backwards. Because if you can't, as a leader, tell me where you want to be in 3 years or 5 years, whatever the time is, every industry is different. Like if it's the aviation sector, you got to be on a 10-year projectile. But if you're a tech company, if you can't tell me in 2-3 years where you want to be, forget about it.
I think that it's the lab, what you just said. They come in trying to fit the culture because they don't often come with their own ideals. And sometimes what I've noticed is people who got, let's say, went to a good business school, they automatically assume that they can go and start in a company and become a director on day one or a leader because they went to a good business school. And in the end, they don't realize that's not what leadership is about. It's not just based on, you know, the business school you went on. It's bigger than that. And what I've seen in terms of you know, reckoning with these leadership people that are wanting to be coached is that they're often lost about what their place is. They're often confused about what they really have to and how big a space they can take in that role. Sometimes they it's like you said, it's a task thing. You know, okay, if I do all these tasks and I'm a good leader, is it really about that or is it something totally different? And I think often they don't ask the questions and they don't know what they don't know. They don't say, well, what can I do more? I think leadership comes usually for me with someone who says, what can I do to be better tomorrow? What are the questions I need to ask myself to be able to lead in the place so that I know I'll make a difference? And I think that to me is what these individuals need in terms of becoming better and more aware of their potential.
Like that's exactly what we were mentioning before. And you were saying like, maybe I'm very direct, but the thing is that like, I know that if you have in order to be able to think or in order to have progress, you have to be able to be, you have to risk the chance of being offensive. And being offensive isn't always a negative thing. It's the fact that you could speak the truth and say, this is how we're going to achieve the goal. As much as you've been doing this for the entirety of a company, or the entirety of your leadership tenure, it may offend you, but it's going to take you to the next step. And a lot of times to be a leader that gets to the next level, it's about breaking barriers that you've had previously. Because a lot of times for you to go from entry level to middle management and then to become the CEO, the skills within that leadership is very different. Like my wife works at a big, big company. And a lot of times in those big, big companies, you have to manage up. So the subordinates always get left empty-handed. But the thing is that like once you get to the top, there's no more upselling anymore. You now have the entirety of everyone below you, which is a completely different structure or a completely different style of leadership. You know, it's like when I was telling Charles earlier today, I was like, you know, at the gym, I know every single person's name who clean all the janitors. I know all their names. This is their names. This is what country they're from. This is what language they speak. I was even surprised that one of them came from Haiti because it's quite far to get a janitorial job. So, you know, it's very important. But most people, even the people that work at that gym, don't know those people's names.
Oh, for sure. And they don't take the interest to get to know them or to say good morning, good afternoon, because it can be for some people the status thing. Well, I'm this and I'm the member, you work here. And the fact when you blur those lines and treat people with respect and dignity and show them that you're interested, that makes all the difference. And for me, what you did, because I told you this before, that's leadership. That's showing you show interest and you show care. And that goes a lot further than just being blasé and not asking any questions to the people that work to make your day better.
It's the 360 approach.
Go ahead, Marcus.
No, go on.
There was a great book out of Harvard Business School about emotional intelligence and talks about why CEOs of the company should have that. Rajiv Suri, who was one of the authors, he said about leadership is about emotional intelligence, whereby management is taught while leadership is experienced, right? And that's so true.
I worked for one of my first jobs as a temp after college was working at the Cornell University Medical School alumni office. And I did a great job being the leader to like do the thing to build this alumni book, because some people were having these stories that they were World War II bomber pilots and they have problems with ear infections or something now that they're older. But when it came to the point that that job was done and I had to make phone calls to people, like this is maybe 2 months later, the woman let me go for a week because she says your motivation on the phone or your ability to sound overly happy and excited wasn't sufficient. So I was a fantastic leader when it came to building the alumni stuff, doing the graphic design and all those things. But the woman who had no graphic design experience was sitting to my right. She was amazing on the phone. So being a leader also comes with the fact that you have to know this is your weakness. And if that's your weakness, embrace it, take it, and find someone that could fill that gap for you. Because the most important thing about being a leader is vulnerability and the ability to say, I don't know this, and who could fill that gap for me? Because delegation is a massively important skill in a leadership role.
Absolutely. I think oftentimes if you see some of the people who are exhausted or go through burnout, which is a common affair here in France, where you know they don't know how to delegate because they want to do everything themselves. There's certain personality types that believe only way that's going to be done is if I do it because it'll be well done. Instead of saying, you know what? What if I taught my team how to do it in a way so that they can be able to do it when I'm not there? To kind of change the mindset and not feel that only you can do it the best way.
Even the full defense with the FTX thing was the fact that the person had no delegation and didn't pass risk management to somebody else.
So what's the solution then? What do you think?
Well, we got to get Charles into more corporations is what I think. It doesn't stop. The solution doesn't happen in the exit strategy. We Our job is to execute contracts and make sure that people are happy with the new equity that they're holding in their possession. Charles's job is to enforce and inspire and to bring that message out to people. But, you know, Charles, I want to thank you for all the time you've given us. It's been an extraordinary conversation. You know, and especially that all three of us, Ralph and Swadek and I, we have very different experiences within the same sector, you know. But I'm happy to know that you and I are both American, or you're from Canada originally, in France. I actually thought when I first met you that you were American, you know, because, you know, it's, I'm not going to say why, but like it's, I wasn't expecting it. I thought you were from New York or something. So.
That's all right. Many people usually do think the same.
It's the energy that you have.
New York vibe.
It's a New York vibe, that energy. That's the whole thing.
Exactly.
But
don't say that, because Ralph might feel bad. He's in Florida and it's very cold.
That's new energy that he's getting. That's new energy. That's the thing.
It's a pretty cold, raw day down here.
Which means it's 75 degrees.
No, I don't think it's 75. I have no idea what the temperature is.
So he's using SPF 10, not SPF 16. Is it?
That's true.
Well, guys, thanks so much. We'll speak soon. And we look forward to seeing what I want to see Charles's next leadership event here in Paris.
I'll keep you all posted for sure.
Look forward to that, Charles.
Thank you, gentlemen. I wish you a really good evening. Thank you for this moment in time.
Yes.
Thank you.
That was episode 17 of The Exit Strategy. We hope you loved it. We look forward to seeing you the next time. Please like, share, and subscribe. We'll speak to you the next time.